This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Fraud, foreigners, and cheating. It's why the Democrat Party exists. We'll talk about the foreigners tonight, the fraud, the cheating. John Solomon's going to be here to expand on some of that. Bill Jacobson, what's happening at the Supreme Court, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Fraud, foreigners, and cheating. This is something we've talked about over and over and over again, and we'll discuss it over and over and over again, because that is the very foundation of the Democrat Party. Without fraud, foreigners, and cheating, the Democrat Party, I know this is difficult to believe, it really goes extinct in the United States of America. Have you ever looked at the issues and see Democrats? They've taken the 20% side of all these 80-20 issues, trannies and all kinds of stuff like that. They take the 20% side and they don't move, even though the public is against it. But in a representative republic, a constitutional republic like we have here, shouldn't that mean Democrats become the 20% party? Just a few kooky blue areas, San Francisco, of course, and whatnot, but everywhere else, the party goes extinct, right? Well, no, they're half the country. After the midterms this November, if things go the way they look, they're looking to go, they're going to be the majority of Congress, certainly the majority of the House. How is that possible to have the 20% on the issues, but 50% of the power? Fraud, foreigners, and cheating. Why do you think they brought so many barbarians into your country? You love your country. You want what's best for your country. The barbarians Democrats bring in mass into this country don't care about your country. They don't care about the founding. They don't care. They don't share your moral values at all on theft, rape, murder. They don't come from that culture. They don't even recognize that culture. They don't care about who Thomas Jefferson was. They are here to rape and loot and pillage. They're here to do, well, things like this.
New disturbing details revealed in court about the man accused of setting this building on fire and killing four complete strangers, including a three-year-old girl.
This is probably the most severe crime that this borough has seen in the last few years.
Queens District Attorney Melinda Katz says 38-year-old Roman Amatitla of Corona, Queens, admitted to investigators that he lit this building on fire. That three-year-old girl and two adults died inside of smoke inhalation. Heavy smoke forced five residents to jump out of the windows to try to save their own lives. A 64-year-old man didn't make it. The DA is calling it an act of mass murder as the criminal complaint reveals a shocking motive that Amatitla admitted to starting the fire, quote, as a way to get his rage out over being fired from an unrelated job by individuals unrelated to the incident. Prosecutors say he also told detectives that he, quote, had been in a fight at work and that he knew lighting the fire was going to cause harm to someone, but he did it because he needed to get his anger out. Prosecutors say he recently lost his job working in the food industry.
What'd she call him? I'm trying to remember. A Queens man, I think is what she said. But he's not a Queens man. The Mexican. The Mexican national. So, obviously, everybody's equally outraged about this whole story, right? Surely, right? No, ICE actually requested that they could take possession of the man once he's out of prison, and New York City said, no, we're not going to let you know. When that man's prison sentence is over, and I think you and I both know that he's not going to get life, he's not going to get the death penalty, they'll give him as short of a sentence as they possibly can, New York is going to set him free back on your streets. I mean, this is the mayor of New York City.
ICE is a cruel and inhumane agency, and that here in New York City, we are focused on delivering public safety. I talk about affordability every single day. I know that affordability, it is premised on the delivery of public safety first and foremost. That's why, you know, whether it's the president I'm talking to or anyone else for that matter, I speak about the fact that our approach to public safety in New York City, it's working. We know what we need to do to deliver safety. We have the NYPD tasked with that responsibility. To think that ICE should be doing that, it's speaks to a complete abdication, frankly, of the kind of politics that New Yorkers are looking for.
You understand the deal? Mamdani understands the deal. Why would he be against ICE? ICE is not supposed to be controversial, after all. Shouldn't be a partisan thing, of course. They just deport foreigners. Well, he only sits in the mayor's chair because of foreigners. Why is he so against ICE? Native-born New Yorkers outright, they rejected that man completely. Did not vote for him. Foreign-born New Yorkers overwhelmingly voted for him. Now he gets to be mayor. He's serving his constituents. When people in the House of Representatives like Pramila Jayapal go on the news and they say things like this, don't be confused.
The majority of Americans across the country, regardless of political party, know that immigrants from all over the world, Somalia, India, wherever they're from, Latin America, Africa, that immigrants have built this country and make this country what it is today.
They say it all the time. It's the Democrat talking point. How can they get away with that? At no other point in American history could any politician in any party get away with saying something like that. Well, when you bring in enough foreigners, that's what wins you elections. She knows why she sits in the House of Representatives. She knows American-born people would never send a savage like that to the House of Representatives to destroy this country, but she knows foreigners certainly will. She'll promise them generous government goodies, of course paid for with your money, and then she gets to go back and sit in power forever while illegals take a dump, probably an actual dump on the street in front of your home before they try to rape your daughter. This is how it works in the country now. This took place, this was an introduction, at the Democrat convention in Michigan. Why is this happening? The mass importation of foreigners. Shouldn't be happening. Then you have to deport foreigners. By the way, I should just take this quick side note here. All foreigners. Not just the worst ones. We're getting the worst. Good, get the worst. And then get the rest. All of them. Otherwise, this man's going to be the next senator from Michigan.
ICE cannot be reformed. ICE cannot be ICE cannot be retrained. ICE must be abolished.
Abdul El Said, running for Senate in Michigan, standing up saying America's deportation force should be abolished. Here's the next governor of Minnesota.
I am incredibly clear that the Somali community is part of the fabric of the state of Minnesota. The Somali community has always been a part of my Minnesota. So I want to just encourage the community to know that we're with you. We've got your back. Support our Somali businesses, support our immigrant neighbors. And I know that things are scary right now. And just know that there are more people who are looking out for you. There are more people who are here to support you than you know. I will continue to stand with the Somali community to be with you and to do all I can to return the friendship and community that the Somali community has shown me. Thank you so much.
Return the friendship. How's that work? Well, it's quite simple. She wants to win elections. Somalis want to steal. She, after she wins elections, will protect all the Somalis who steal. In return, the Somalis will vote as one block for Peggy Flanagan and Tim Walz and every other communist. It's a wonderful deal for them. You, of course, get your country destroyed and pillaged, but works out great for them. And they use all kinds of different tactics to try to turn down mass deportations. Tactics that are, they look like right now they're probably working on the Trump administration. You know, Democrats, you know that they put a lot of money into stopping deportations. Did you know that? It's not just money on things you think. Yes, the commie street activism and things like that. They spent millions on psychological studies on how do we get to women. They also spent millions throwing money around with different influencers, who likes that word, but different influencers trying to speak a certain way to try to influence women in this country. So they'll say, well, we shouldn't deport him. He's a cute kid. Why do you think Miss Rachel's on MS Now?
It's heartbreaking talking to the kids and their families. They're talking about water that they can't even drink that makes them sick. There's been worms in the food. The food's rotten sometimes. And what really frightens me is the dangerously inadequate medical care and medical emergencies. These are basic human rights for children, and we can all agree not to harm and abuse children. It's not who we want to be. And I'm kind of in shock about what I'm hearing, and I don't think people really know what's going on inside of Dilley. And I think if we all know, I really think we can unite over not wanting to harm children. So
this is an op. It's an obvious op. Now, not changing the subject, but remember Greg Bovino? Greg Bovino was that Border Patrol guy who was front and center on the mass deportations that were taking place last year, rounding up foreigners, keeping the crowds at bay. After a couple communist street animals got killed in Minnesota, he got retired. We all understand what happened there. Here's Greg Bovino.
Immigration enforcement, let's make it so hard for them to live, to work, to recreate, to do anything in the United States that they have no choice but to self-deport. And that's what we were doing in some of those large cities. Look at Los Angeles. Before we left Los Angeles a few months back, it was locked down. The fashion district there in downtown Los Angeles, completely locked down. The illegal alien businesses, the businesses ran by illegal aliens, the businesses that were inhabited by illegal aliens, completely shut down. And we started to see those self-deportations rise, because if you can't make a living and you can't move and work freely, then what other choice do you have? And doing that nationwide, as you say, whether it's looking at the banking system, taxes on remittances, there's a whole host of things that we can do to lock them down and encourage them to self-deport.
Yeah, that guy got retired. I think communists ran an op. They retired that guy. Now these guys run DHS.
We do have a different leadership style. We're still enforcing immigration laws. We're still deporting illegals that shouldn't be here. We're still going after the worst of the worst. But we're doing it in a more quiet way, because my goal in 6 months is to not have DHS on the lead story every day. We want to make sure people understand we're here working for the people, not against you.
Head of DHS. Responsible for securing the border and deporting 50 million foreigners. What's his goal? What was it he just said? His goal is to not be in the headlines. You know, we have a testosterone crisis in this country. We're losing 1% of our testosterone every year. That's why you go on television and talk about your goals of avoiding bad headlines. That's where a male vitality stack comes in. With a male vitality stack from CHOQ, you will get things like, oh, I don't know, a clinically tested 20% increase in your testosterone levels in 90 days with natural herbal supplements, and you'll be never, ever, ever tempted to give in to obvious communist subversion. All you have to do is go to CHOQ.com/JesseTV. Start your male vitality stack today. You may one day find yourself strong enough to stand up for the country. We'll be back. Well, we have breaking news. I mean, I guess it's not breaking news. It happened hours ago, but Sheila Sherfalus McCormick, always beware of the hyphenated last name, she had to resign from the House of Representatives. Apparently, at least the allegations say, she stuffed a bunch of COVID money into her campaign account to run for re-election. Look, I shouldn't laugh because it's your money and it's my money. But what else are we going to do? This is what these people do. This is how these people look at office. In the end, what do we always say? In the end, they're all just thieves. Now, Why do they say the things they say? They'll lie and they'll cheat and they'll do this and that and they'll do whatever to get into office. They are trying to get that key to the taxpayer bank vault. That is the entire goal. That's how they all think. And it might be, look, it takes place at the local level. Your mayor might be doing it. Governor, senator, House of Representatives. Why do they sit through all these boring meetings they have to go to? And you got to pick up the phone and call and ask people for money. And you got to go to parties with people you don't like. And you got to say this. And you got, why go through all that? All of it is in a quest for that wonderful, wonderful key that gives them access to your money. In the end, they're all just dirty thieves. You see what Ilhan Omar said, by the way?
They said you reported a net worth between $6 million and $30 million. And they said your 2023 disclosure was roughly $40,000, between $40,000 and a quarter million.
Yeah, but they're not—they're not net worths. They're like the asset things for the companies. And so I don't know what percentage of it my husband actually has investment in. Like, that's not, you know what I mean? It's not a full picture of the numbers in the way that it is presented in the document, because in the documents, we have to do ranges and we have to like report in a way that is not detailed. It's not like your tax return that you're submitting for the public record to see.
But that is a big increase, though. So you could understand why people would
ask questions. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure it'll get like adjusted at some level when those ranges are looked at.
Look, there's a range, right? So I was off by a few million. There's a range. It's not a range. She's a dirty thief. As soon as her dirtball family came over here from their dirtball country, she started to seek out power. And she's just there to be a dirty thief. After all, that's all they know.
There's been about 77 or so
75 defendants.
Yeah, that have been indicted. Many of them have taken plea agreements.
They got to make it hard for you, right? Just in general, not because you got anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But when he can point and say, "Well, this actually happened."
No, I mean it doesn't make it hard for me, but it does make it hard for, you know, the average Somali business owner.
There you go. Yeah.
It makes it hard for the average immigrant business owner. It makes it hard for the average Black business owner, because it does create this cloud of suspicion. You'll have people go to restaurants, coffee shops, with their cameras harassing all of these business owners.
And daycares,
and
right?
And daycare centers, where people have not been able to take their children because they're scared.
Yeah. Makes it tough on the business owner. It's tough on our community when these people keep talking about the fact we're a bunch of filthy thieves and leeches on this country. It's tough, isn't it? Anyway, say a prayer for those people. All right. Let's talk to John Solomon, speaking about fraud, foreigners, cheating. There is a story out on Just the News about the 2020 election fraud. And honestly, I thought I was already as mortified as I could be about what took place. You're going to want to hang on as we talk to John Solomon about that. Before we talk to John, let me talk to you about Americans. That's enough foreigner talk. Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile hire foreigners. That's what they prioritize, as many as they possibly can. They'll get rid of Americans and hire foreigners. American jobs gone, foreigners continue to pour into the country, or they'll just open call centers in other countries. It's awful. Standard American business now, but Pure Talk doesn't do it that way. Pure Talk still cares about this country. Their CEO fought for this country in Vietnam, two tours, and Pure Talk hires Americans. This is the veteran-led company that is still patriotic, still red, white, and blue. That's who should get your cell phone money, and you'll send them less. You want your bill to go down? Switch to a company that loves the country as much as you do. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Blue. That is one of those organizations that political nerds like me, and probably you if we're being honest, we know, we've at least heard of it, but a lot of people haven't heard of it. And it looks like this big, very powerful organization might be in a little bit of trouble. Joining me now to break that news, as he always does, is my favorite John Solomon, founder of Just the News. John, first of all, before we get into their latest and greatest, what is Act Blue specifically?
It is the largest Democratic online fundraising machine in America. It moves hundreds of millions of dollars of small donations, online donations, to Democrat and liberal causes every election cycle. It is the juggernaut of the Democratic fundraising machine these days.
I remember when we had Hurricane Harvey down in my neck of the woods in Houston, and Democrats famously fundraised to help those hurricane victims, and instead the money went to Act Blue. That's just how these people operate. Now, what's the latest and greatest?
Well, there have been three investigations ongoing. There's one in the Senate, one in the FBI and Justice Department, and then one in the House. Yesterday, the House, three separate committees of the United States House of Representatives, the Judiciary Committee, Administration Committee, and the Oversight Committee, sent a letter to Act Blue saying, hey, we think you misled us. We think you've been lying about this, and we're going to bring you in for further depositions. Now, as part of that, they also released a report. The report said that all of the legal compliance officers for Act Blue, the lawyers who were supposed to keep Act Blue out of trouble, all took the Fifth Amendment when being questioned about the various practices designed to keep illegal foreign money and excessive donations from moving through the platform to Democrat and liberal causes. That is not a good sign if you're Act Blue, if your lawyers lawyer up and take the Fifth Amendment. The third element of that is that the report hinted at some pretty significant transactions, that Act Blue became aware at various times that foreign money and other illicit transactions were coming through their platform, but didn't tighten up their fraud prevention tactics. In fact, they did the opposite. They downgraded their fraud prevention tactics, almost seeming to enable fraud to occur on the platform easier. One of the things they got rid of and didn't use for most of the 2024 election campaign, that little three number code that you have in the back of your credit card, that's probably the biggest, the CVV it's called, the biggest fraud prevention opportunity that everybody has. If you don't have the code, you don't have the card, you're not the person. For some reason, Act Blue got rid of that for a long period of time until they were called out on it after a series of stories by Just the News in the summer of 2024. That was a really red flag. And if that isn't enough to make you suspicious about Act Blue, yesterday, the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, sued Act Blue, saying that they had misled the state in its investigation and that they likely engaged in improper fundraising in the state. So there is a world of hurt surrounding Act Blue this moment. And meanwhile, donations on Act Blue look to be a little bit down this year compared to prior years.
Okay, so you would know this much better than me. This sounds complicated, as in this sounds like something that's going to take a while to unravel and expose. And if people are expecting Act Blue CEO, whoever that may be, to go to prison tomorrow, they're going to be sorely mistaken.
Well, I think there's one issue that is very prescient and very time sensitive, and that is that a couple of weeks ago in a New York Times article, a letter surfaced from the law firm that was representing Act Blue that made clear that Act Blue's own lawyers believe that Act Blue had misled Congress, had made a false representation or statement to Congress. That's not a hard case to bring. If that is true, and if the lawyer's evidence becomes part of that case, that could be a profound and quick potential prosecution. And then you might take that act as a prosecutor because you want to roll a person up or a couple people up to get them to cooperate against the larger enterprise. So I'd be watching for that part of the case to bubble up. Meanwhile, I think Cash Patel dropped a big bombshell in the Maria Bartiromo Sunday show. He said that the election meddling allegations are now part of the grand conspiracy case, the one that's looking at Russia collusion as election meddling, Ukraine impeachment as election meddling, the raid on Donald Trump's house as in Mar-a-Lago as election meddling, and of course, Jack Smith's antics before the 24 election. The fact that he said that now election integrity issues are part of that is a big, big shift. That is the first time we've heard that. And it appears to be that ActBlue is part of that election cheating, election concerns that are being investigated. It doesn't mean it happened, but that's clearly what they're looking at. Did they allow illicit foreign money or excessive donations to come into? So DOJ looks like it's got a hot iron right now. I think the nearest case, if they do make one, and it doesn't mean that the evidence will show this, but if the lawyers for ActBlue are telling the truth in that letter, ActBlue could have a charge of misleading or obstructing Congress come at it pretty soon.
That'd be wonderful. Speaking of Kash Patel, here's what else he had to say.
I am never going to let this go because they not only have personally attacked the presidency of the United States and President Trump, but they tried to thwart our elections and rig the entire system. And that is not something that is going to stop on it. That is not something I'm going to allow on my watch. Right. But you just have to remember, they built this disease temple over 20 and 30 years. We've got all the evidence. I can announce on your show that we've got all the information we need. We're working with our prosecutors, the Department of Justice, and their Attorney General Todd Blanche, and we are going to be making arrests, and it's coming, and I promise you, it's coming soon.
John, who, what, what's happening?
Yeah, these are great questions. So let's remind everybody what I broke on Saturday, that Joe DeGenova, former U.S. attorney, former special counsel, former independent counsel, one of the few lawyers in American history to hold all three of those titles, a very accomplished prosecutorial lawyer. He just took over the grand conspiracy case in Fort Pierce, Florida. That is some heavy artillery if you're talking about a prosecutor who knows what he's doing. There are two cases pending right now. There's a case looking at whether John Brennan misled and obstructed Congress and whether James Comey lied and obstructed to Congress. There's been new evidence presented. The Brennan case has been tied up a little bit because the Senate, the John Thune Senate, the place where action goes to die, or as I like to call it, the grand old party of procrastinators, GOP, grand old procrastinators. They haven't yet complied with a request that came in back in January and February for the Senate to transmit certain evidence to the grand jury. But if John Thune can get that done, it will become a very important part of the case. And I think the decisions on whether to indict Brennan and Comey could be made in the next few weeks. When you saw Maria Bartiromo at that clip, the next question she said is it going to be in the next couple of weeks? And Kash Patel said, yeah, I think so. That's consistent with what I've been hearing. That, you know, there always can be a delay here and there. But I do think this spring, the first decisions on who should be indicted for weaponization are going to be made down in Florida.
You have a piece out, speaking of all this stuff, about intel agencies, the 2020 election having, what did they say, vulnerabilities. What is all this?
Yeah, it's an important piece of evidence, and you have to put it together with two or three other things that I've kind of squeezed out of the DNI in the last couple of months. And by the way, I want to thank Tulsi Gabbard personally for considering the specific requests I made for documents and declassifying them. She did that on her own. And it's a great act of transparency. We fight with government a lot, but she's been fantastic in getting us documents we've identified in our reporting that we believe are of national interest. Today, I want to remind everybody what we were told in December 2020 when Donald Trump was crying foul about the 2020 election. We were told it was the most secure election in American history. That is what people said on the record, on television, on camera. We now know that that was not the case. Another false narrative concocted by the bureaucrats in government, just like Russia collusion, just like Ukraine impeachment, like just all the other things that we've been talking about. We now know that China and Iran had hacked into the voter registration databases of multiple states. Iran at least one, China multiple states. We were never told that. That is one of the largest breaches in American electoral history. We still don't know the names of all the states, though I'm now beginning to be told it's more than a dozen. So it's a massive breach. It's been kept secret for 6 years. It's only because Tulsi Gabbard's digging into this and Kash Patel's digging into it that we're now getting visibility. So we broke that story a couple of weeks ago, and what we broke this morning is the precursor warning that the intelligence community knew at the start of the 2020 election, in January and February of 2020, that these systems were vulnerable. Specifically, they flagged the voter registration data, and they described how a foreign power would likely use that data. If they got it, they would file false ballots. They would potentially knock people off the voter registration list. They would assume identities and do influence operations on social media. That's exactly what would happen just 3 or 4 months later. The CIA, the FBI, the NSA began detecting evidence in the spring of 2020, just a few months after that document I made public today was written, that China and Iran had done that. Iran stole 100,000 voter identities and used them for ballot influence operations. China, we believe, breached more than a dozen states' voter registration databases. And then we know, because of documents Kash Patel made public recently that we wrote and broke about, that the Chinese sent tens of thousands of fake driver's licenses to the United States in the summer of 2020. So they breached the databases, they get the identities, they send fake driver's licenses, and according to the FBI documents, their goal was to get ballots. The Chinese were going to get ballots and vote in the names of Americans and try to swing the election to Joe Biden. That's what the FBI documents say. All of that was kept from us for the last 6 years, and it's certainly those records that are now out in public do not equate to the most secure election in American history. We were lied to.
Final one from me, John, and it's a fairly important one. Do we know who kept that information from us at, say, the FBI? Because that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, listen, we know from the documents I got a few weeks ago that the FBI originally wanted to put an alert out and did quickly put an alert out when the driver's licenses were captured. They were stopped at an airport, and the FBI had a very reliable informant in China saying this was a plot to help Joe Biden. Within 24 or 48 hours, their supervisors in the counterintelligence division ordered them to recall that report and destroy it. I want to repeat what I just said. They said, don't pull it back from all the agencies you just sent it to and instruct those agencies to destroy the document. That sounds like a cover-up because, by the way, the evidence is held true to this day. They re-vetted that informant multiple times. They have considered that informant to be reliable. And by the way, the government has in its possession the fake driver's licenses. They intercepted it. So it was a real plot. When it comes to Ukraine and the stuff we broke last week, we know it was the Inspector General, Michael Atkinson. When it comes to FBI documents, there's a heavy focus on the seventh floor, the leadership of the FBI, at Chris Wray, and people downstream from him. And also, there's a growing body of evidence, particularly in Arctic Frost, and there was a hearing today in the Senate, that the Washington Field Office, which is the second most prominent local office in the FBI after New York, those are the two big ones, that they have been involved in some really nefarious things in targeting Trump supporters without cause, without having a predicate or criminal case that made sense. And so those are the players. We're going to get more names as more documents get declassified. I think in mid-May, Tulsi Gabbard is likely to drop a giant bombshell showing just which states were breached by China, which voter data was compromised by China. Those states have never been told. This will be an alert to those states, but think about what it might do in the Senate. Right now, John Thune can't move the Save America Act through the Senate, but maybe if some of those senators found out, hey, your state, your constituents, your voters were compromised by China in 2020 and you were kept in the dark for 6 years, maybe there would be some momentum in the Senate. We'll have to see how that plays out.
John, thank you, brother, as always. An evil secret state police agency that should no longer exist. Defund the FBI, fire every single employee, and demo the building, or you will regret it one day, as if we don't already. Now, I don't know about you. That's the kind of thing when you find out, make you have some trouble sleeping, right? I'll be fine. Because I'm going to have a cup of hot chocolate before bed tonight, and it's going to be dream powder from Beam. I'm going to take a little glass, little coffee cup of milk, and warm it up in the microwave, and I'm going to mix in some dream powder and stir it up, and it's going to be delicious cinnamon chocolate, and then I'm going to drift off to sleep like I do all the time and knock out 8-9 hours of sleep and wake up feeling great. Natural ingredients, drug-free. Go experience a wonderful night's sleep. Sleep through the night again. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. The Dobbs leak. Just to recap, in case you've lost track of all the terrible scandals. Well, we have some new members of the Supreme Court because we've had Democrat presidents in recent years. Supreme Court was about to overturn Roe versus Wade. And the thing that never happens, happened. Somebody leaked the decision, and soon someone's flying from California with a gun to shoot Brett Kavanaugh in the face. But we never did get down to who would do such a thing, who would leak it. Joining me now, the great Bill Jacobs, since he has about 1,000 things he has to unravel for us. Cornell Law, founder of Legal Insurrection. Bill, what sort of memos did the New York Times get on all this? What's the latest and greatest or worst on it all?
Well, the latest leak from inside the Supreme Court goes back to 2016. So the New York Times got their hands somehow on a stack of confidential memos between the justices from 2016. And it had to do with how they would consider emergency appeals, what is now referred to as the shadow docket. And the shadow docket has become particularly important in Trump 2.0 because of so many runaway district court judges. The Supreme Court several dozen times has had to jump in. So this is the New York Times attacking the use of the shadow docket, and the way they're attacking it is they got their hands on some confidential memos. The memos themselves are frankly nothing remarkable. What's remarkable, though, is that the leaks are coming from inside the House. If you want to destroy the Supreme Court, which the Democrats hate now because they don't have control of it, if you want to destroy it, there's several ways you do it. You can do it like Chuck Schumer and stand on the steps threatening the whirlwind against Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, or you can go on TV and wail at them and say, we're going to pack the court. But the New York Times and the Democrats are doing it in a much more pernicious way. They're trying to destroy the institution from the inside out. And the way you do that is you breach the confidentiality of the justices' communications with each other. We saw it most dramatically in Dobbs, and now we're seeing the New York Times going back a decade to do it again. And so this is nothing short of an attempt to destroy the ability of the court to function, to destroy the ability of the conservative justices to communicate with each other.
Okay, Bill, at the risk of asking a dark question that may have a dark answer, Pandora's box is obviously open. That trust has obviously already been violated. We can't undo that. Now, how do we fix it? Can it be fixed?
I don't know if it can be fixed. I mean, I think the first step that was a huge mistake is the mishandling of the Dobbs investigation, which it's insane that we don't know to this day who leaked that draft decision. And that was probably because John Roberts wanted to keep the investigation internal. There's conflicting reports as to whether he got help from the FBI or not, but it was completely mishandled. I think, you know, if you see somebody held to account because of that, that's how you put a stop to it. I think the court's going to have to reconsider all its internal communications procedures. Now, remember, this was the latest batch is from 2016. But where did that come from? Did that come from internal servers at the Supreme Court? Were these on file there? Or did somebody a decade ago, some pernicious law clerk or somebody like that, squirrel these away and wait for the right opportunity to drop them? We don't know, but it really is destroying and can destroy the ability of the court to function.
Bill, I'm going to ask you something, and I know you're a lawyer, so you're not going to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I'm stupid. Who do you think's doing this? Obviously, it's not Clarence Thomas, right? It's clear because of what's being leaked. We understand it's someone on the left. Who do we peg for this? Is this Sotomayor, Ketanji, Kagan? Who's doing it?
I don't know. My guess is that it's not one of the justices themselves. There was a lot of speculation about Dobbs that it might have been one of the law clerks. And so I don't know. I mean, we can all speculate. I don't think it's coming from the conservative side because there's nothing in it for them. I mean, the Dobbs leak almost got one of them killed. So I don't think it's coming from the conservative side. My guess is it's coming from very ideological, radicalized law clerks who were hired probably by the left-wing justices on the court.
Okay, so again, I'll just stack another lame question on top of this. How does that happen? How can there be radical commie nut jobs who get such critical positions of power like that with access to such critical information? Isn't there like a background check or something?
Well, I think the justices select their own law clerks. And I'm not, when I say radicalized and ideological, I'm not necessarily saying they're all the way to the communist side of things. They're probably your typical progressive student who views the conservatives as a threat to the country. I'm not sure they're necessarily communist, but I think that's probably more likely rather than someone who's so extreme that they would have a paper trail. It's probably somebody who's just your average run-of-the-mill progressive, who might normally, under other circumstances, be shouting on TikTok or on X and or wherever they are now. There's some other platform, I've forgotten what it's called. They fled there. But it's probably just some your mainstream progressive law clerk or progressive clerk or employee who has Trump derangement syndrome, who hates the Republicans, but doesn't necessarily have any sort of paper trail.
I love Clarence Thomas. Here was Clarence Thomas, by the way.
Progressivism seeks to replace the basic premises of the Declaration of Independence, and hence our form of government. It holds that our rights and our dignities come not from God, but from government. It requires of the people a subservience and weakness incompatible with a constitution premised on the transcendent origin of our rights.
I love that guy, Bill. Should he retire? I don't want him to.
This is the big dilemma. You know, we don't want any of the conservative justices, particularly Thomas and Alito, who are well into their 70s, to pull a Ruth Bader Ginsburg and hang on too long. And God forbid, should have to leave the court for health or other reasons when there's a Democrat Senate or there's a Democrat president. And that's the dilemma. I'd hate to lose either of these two people, but I guess it depends how you're thinking. If you're thinking about long-term institutional stability, then probably one of them should retire now. At least let Trump name that replacement. So I don't want either of them to go. I don't want Justice Thomas to go. These are two brilliant people who are really the stars of the court. On the other hand, that's how the liberals thought about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Ginsburg was their Scalia, okay? And their Scalia, Justice Ginsburg, hung on too long, even though people were calling her to retire. And so that's a dilemma. I would hope one of them would make that decision, but I don't want to see either of them go.
Do we have some star that you, because I trust you on all these things, Bill, that you have your eye on where you say, you know what, that could maybe be our next Alito, that could be our next Thomas?
Well, I can't say I've surveyed the field, okay? So this is not exclusive to everybody else, but Judge Ho from the Fifth Circuit is widely regarded as a top contender. If he is nominated, believe me, it will freak the left out completely. Whether they pull a Kavanaugh again or not, I don't know. But he is really the one who has led the way in the courts of appeal. And he, I think, is the most likely nominee. And if he is the nominee, based on anything I know about his record, he should be a star.
I've heard the name several times before. All right. Well, I guess we're rooting for Judge Hill. Thank you, Bill, as always. We have Light in the Mood. Next. What's my favorite thing? You know what it is. In politics, what is my favorite thing? Democrats pandering to black people. It's the greatest. It's the greatest. It's hilarious. It's shameless. It's racist. It's almost all the time. It's terribly racist, which means it's all hilarious. Dome tries to do this. Remember back when she was running for president and she was trying to make sure she had the black vote shored up and she started talking about smoking weed and listening to Tupac? We forget about that one. Well, she's back. You know she's eyeballing a presidential run and, well, speaking to a bunch of black women, she thought she had to go, girl.
Because of high level of character, which is to say I must conduct myself in a way that I honor the ancestors and all who have sacrificed before me. And so I will vote because it is my duty for all that paved the path for me to be here. But they count on that. I think it's okay for us to be a bit transactional too. And to say, I'm gonna get mine also. And so don't count on me to be a voter.
I'm gonna get mine. You go, Dome. Let's see you tomorrow.